On FM, digital and your mobile. Cambridge 105 Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour, the food and drink programme for Cambridge and the surrounding areas. Thanks to Ian Dayborn for the last 2 hours. I am Matt Bentman.
And I'm Alan Alder. And today we look at the new Cambridgeshire cookbook, Second Helpings. Discover Seed to Feed, which is supplying our best restaurants with some stunning produce. Hear some more of those guilty food secrets.
We'll also catch up with Alice Archer on the best red wines for summer drinking and review the new edition of Where Chefs Eat and look at the food and drink news as well. So, to begin with, on our last programme we heard about all sorts of guilty food secrets, but there are more. So we shall begin with Samira Effer, head chef at Alimentum in Hills Road.
Tesco do these like frozen onion rings.
I can't believe you said that.
Literally, I don't know why I like them.
Frozen onion rings.
Frozen breadcrumbed onion rings. That's probably the worst thing that I eat. Yeah.
Are they heated in the oven then? Or do you literally deep fry them again?
No. You put them into the oven and then I'll have them with like hot sauce. Like hot sauce is like my I love hot sauce, so I probably eat it with like hot sauce and mayo and just sit there and eat it. That's probably the worst thing that I eat. Yeah.
I love it. And will we see those on the menu at Alimentum, do you
think? No, definitely not. That's just a home thing. No one knows about that. Apart
well, they do now.
The whole Cambridge.
Yeah.
Yes, they do. Oh, well, that's hilarious. Samira Effer in conversation with Tina Roche of Cambridge Cookery and Bistro. And what good fun. And we have more coming up, including rapper Eminem.
Yes, but before then, a couple of interesting tomes arrived in Flavour's postbag last week. And one of them was Cambridgeshire Cookbook's Second Helpings. Alan, you went along to the launch at the GOG on Tuesday along with Flavour's Dr. Sue Bailey.
Yeah, and what a good book it is. More than 50 recipes from all over Cambridgeshire, from Bartlow in the south to Peterborough in the north, and covering the full gamut of eating, from mains to drinks, from farm shops to Midsummer House. Attractively written and laid out, there's photos of the dishes and of the businesses featured, along with a potted history of each. So, a fascinating as well as a useful book. I asked Anna Tebble from publishers Metze how she decided which chefs to include.
Well, I am a very dedicated foodie, and I think Cambridgeshire is really sport for choice. A lot I do by recommendation. A lot of the people we contacted who are in our first book, which came out 3 years ago, and some very thorough research.
Some very enjoyable research.
Very enjoyable research, yes.
Right. It's very up-to-date, isn't it? Because you've got in there Parker's Tavern, for example.
Of course. How could you not have Parker's Tavern?
Just opening. You've also got the fact that Mark Poynton is setting up on his own. So this is very recent. Or did you get an insight? Or did you get a fancy?
Well, I mean, obviously, with all the people that we feature in the book, we try and have a really good working relationship and any changes, but you want it to be as up to date as you can. But this book will sell on for the next 3-4 years until the next one's done, so we're trying to make it as up to date as possible.
Oh right, so there'll be a third helping,
maybe, yeah. So we try and get a really good cross section, so you're getting everything from fine dining to street food to producers to markets, because I'm a dedicated foodie. I'm as likely to go to a really high-end tasting menu as I am to a street food place, and get everything from steak restaurants to vegan cafes.
The book has a wide range of interesting and exciting recipes. It's nice to see Jack's Gelato's Coffee Granita in there, and an old favourite from the Oak Bistro. Here's James from there to explain.
We included the confit duck leg. We included it because it was quite a favourite on the menu.
And do you think an enthusiastic amateur would make a good job of it?
It is a complicated dish, or more than an everyday dish, so it will take a bit of trial and error, maybe. But I think by the time that you've really tried to get involved in all of the techniques to create that dish, with the confiting itself, with all the ingredients that are included in the dish, and all the marriage of all the different accompaniments, I think that if you follow the instructions, you'll end up with a very delicious dish.
There's a good mixture of complex and simpler recipes, some with unusual ingredients like black garlic, and that's used in the recipe from the Three Hills in Bartlow. Keith, what's the recipe from the Three Hills that's in the book?
It's roast guinea fowl, smoked bacon, black garlic, peas and beans.
So does that go down well with punters?
Very well. Looks good, tastes good, and it's a little bit different.
And tell me about black garlic.
Black garlic, it's readily available from, you know, the vegetable suppliers, but we do our own. It's basically, we dehumidify it for about 10 days, low temperature for about 50 degrees. It slowly turns black over the course of the time. Absolutely stinks everywhere out, but it's the end product's good. It's a lot sweeter than your normal garlic. So
how did you develop this recipe then? Was there a lot of trial and error? Or?
To be quite honest with you, one of my friends done a similar recipe with corn-fed chicken, but with the sweetness of the garlic, and I find guinea fowl's a bit sweeter than chicken, so I messed about with it. Put the asparagus because it was in season, it's in season. Peas, beans, and obviously smoked bacon to give it a little bit of texture and a different element of flavour.
The book's been well researched. They found out about Pudini, for instance. They're based in Willingham and cater for events, parties, weddings. They catered for my daughter's wedding last year, in fact, and were very good indeed. The food looked and tasted fantastic. And their recipe is for char-grilled rump of lamb and stuffed courgette flour. But I imagine much less research was needed to find out about Pint Shop. Here are Izzy and Jack.
We have included in this book the braised pork cheeks that was on our winter menu, and this is a recipe that was originally devised or created by our chef in Oxford, our Oxford branch, Michael. So it's one of his fantastical creations. It's a delicious, rich, wintry recipe, and Benny, one of our co-owners, chose to include it in this one, mainly because I think that it was quite a straightforward recipe to be able to create ourselves at home, and it's a good one for sharing.
It's using those unfashionable cuts of meat like pork cheeks and tongues and things like that we like to focus on at Pint Shop, because people much maligned pork cheeks, they go to waste in a lot of countries, whereas,
you know, but they are becoming more expensive in this country because of places like Pint Shop.
The more fashionable they come, they do get a bit more expensive, so that's why you're always out there looking for the newest cuts of meat.
Yeah, and it's one you like yourself.
Oh,
is it,
it's
by
delicious.
The sound of it.
Yeah, it's so rich and full of flavour. It's really, really very tasty. Yeah.
The recipes show a good ethnic diversity. Here's one from Bridges in Bridge Street, which Maggie describes.
Yeah, it is the Cantonese lettuce wrap, which is a family dish. Basically, I cook it normally, generally, for my children. And I just think if I cook something that I would like it and my children will like it, and then I can explain to the customers and the passion I have. So far so good. We have been serving the customers and they love it. So it's a very versatile dish. It's called lettuce wrap, but you can put whatever inside. Yeah. So and today, actually, I put something totally different from the book. It's still called lettuce wrap, but it's different meats, different veg, and you can be vegetarian, it can be vegan, it can be meaty as well.
Yeah. Well, and it's easy to make?
It is 10 minutes cooking time. Trust me, it is really cooking time. 10 minutes, preparation, half an hour.
Gin of the Baking Gin spoke to Sue Bailey about his dish.
The recipe that I made for the cookbook, it's called Mango Pomelo Sago Cake Roll. Basically, it's my take of Swiss roll. It's a roll with a very light Japanese sponge, incorporated with very famous Chinese dessert, which is a mango pomelo sago dessert. I deconstruct it and make it into the form of cake, and that's my recipe. I created this because I would like to introduce to the people of Cambridge that the taste of Southeast Asia, which is this dessert in with the mango flavor, with the sago, which is, I think, is quite rare for people here.
It's interesting because sago, which we would probably call it, which is tapioca,
yes,
it has horrendous overtones for a lot of English people of stodgy puddings at school. So to have something that is light and delicious and fluffy looking is quite a revelation, I think.
Well, I incorporate the sago into the cream with some mango puree, which makes it tangy and fresh. So I hope people will like it.
Hot Numbers is in here with two coffees, as well as the Gog, whose food on the night was superb. The sausage rolls were the best I've ever tasted, and they've got two recipes. One is for southern fried chicken with fresh chop salad. Here's a recipe from Country Kitchen in Haslingfield, which Claire told me about.
I decided to choose a colourful recipe because I felt it would photograph well. So I chose a recipe that we make quite regularly in the winter, which was a Thai red pepper and sweet potato soup. Very hearty and warming.
And Spanish influences are represented too, in the recipe that Caroline from the Geography in Impington describes.
We have a recipe for Spanish chickpea, chorizo and chicken stew. It's a lovely dish. We had a supper club that was Spanish themed, that was the main course, and it was very popular. So since then we've been selling frozen dishes of the same meal. So we thought we'd include that. It's very easy. I'm all for good ingredients but super easy recipes, and all the flavour of the dish comes from the chorizo sort of infusing the chicken and the potato, so it's very nice.
Sounds good.
Chorizo is also to be found in this one from Little Acre Kitchen in St Ives. Here's Kerry.
From Little Acre Kitchen we've got the sweet corn fritters, which is one of our best sellers. It's on the menu 7 days a week, and so it's perfect lunch or brunch. Yeah, everyone loves the sweet corn fritters.
Won't they start making their own now and not go to Little Acre?
Well, hopefully not, but it's always nice to be cooked for, isn't it?
The book is bang up to date. It mentions Mark Poynton leaving Alimentum, and he provides a generous 3 recipes. Another example of being up to date is the inclusion of Tristan Welch of Parker's Tavern, which opens on the 1st of August. And here is Tristan.
I've chosen to donate a chicken tikka masala pie, because I think it's everything I love about Great Britain. Tikka masala being a British dish, and I hope pies are too. I like to think they are. So why not take 2 of my most favourite delicious things and put them together?
So what is the pastry? Tell me more about what's in it.
Oh, you can't muck around with the pie. It's got to be short crust pastry, and it's got to have a little bird out the top, and it needs to be steaming hot.
That sounds absolutely perfect. And so is it going to be a very spicy pie? Is it a spicy pie?
I think there needs to be, with tikka masala, especially chicken tikka masala, there needs to be a slight edge of spice to it. And that comes a lot from the ginger rather than the chilies, actually. Finished with a bit of creaminess as well.
Cheese lovers will be delighted by this from Helen at the White Cottage Bakery in Kingston.
We have got a recipe for our potted cheese. So rather than having any kind of baked products that you'd expect from the bakery, we thought we'd put something in that was something you could have with good sourdough toast. And this is one of the favourites that we serve up on our workshops when we do our workshops. So pretty much every time we will have this along with salads or charcuterie, but it's very simple and easy to make.
That's what people like. And are there particular cheeses that you would recommend to have in it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, this is a recipe I literally dreamt up. I woke up, I dream food, don't we all? I woke up one morning and had this idea in my head, and I thought it must exist. I must have seen it somewhere else. Did a quick Google search, couldn't find it anywhere, and I thought, well, maybe it really was something that came to me in a dream. And it's a fantastic way of using up all the leftover cheeses that you get. If you've had a dinner and you've bought a cheese board and you've got all sorts of little scraps left, so it doesn't really matter what you put in, as long as you avoid strong cheeses like blue cheeses, or I tend to avoid the rinded soft cheeses, but things like a soft goat's cheese or... this one today, I've got a lovely soft creamy white Stilton and a red Leicester and a quartz cheddar, so got a lovely crunch in that. And Grana Padano, there's feta, parmesan, I can't even remember them all, but I usually put somewhere in the region of 8 or 10 cheeses in when I make it.
And there are drinks too. Ash from Cambridge Distillery.
We've got the Toko Snapper, which is a really, really nice sort of oriental twist on a Bloody Mary. That adds a few spices and it kind of boosts a few of the botanicals in our gin that we use, like the yuzu and the cucumber, and it adds like a real, real meaty, nice touch to the red snapper. So we've called it the Tokyo Snapper for that reason, because it's using our Japanese gin, which is made from botanicals that are used in Japanese cooking. The kind of end result of our gin is it's hugely delicate. It's got this amazing cucumber base, and we use all of the botanicals that you find in a Japanese kitchen, which I feel kind of pairs really, really well with the ethos of this book. And then kind of moving on to the riverside, which is a twist on the Southside cocktail. It's almost like a gin daiquiri. We keep it really, really simple, and we shake it up with mint leaves and lemon verbena leaf as well. So normally we garnish our Cambridge dry gin with mint leaf, and lemon verbena is one of the botanicals used in it because we can't grow citrus in Cambridge.
And one recipe uses an interesting cooking dish from Bulgaria.
They sent me home with this chicken cooker, as they call it, which is a ceramic dish with a spout in the middle, a funnel in the middle, solid underneath, where you put beer or wine or cider or something in the funnel. Then you sit the chicken over the funnel, bottom first, and you cook it in the oven with all your potatoes and everything else around the outside. So I came home with it 3 years ago. I cooked on it when I got home and never, ever cooked chicken any other way since, because it really does work.
So the dishes are really beautifully decorated, aren't they? They're very attractive. It's the sort of thing you would be happy to serve a really interesting dish at the table. I've read about and never tried the cooking a chicken with a beer can underneath it. Yeah. This is a rather more sophisticated way of doing it. Exactly. And looks nice. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is. And I think the beer can works very well. You get the same effect of steaming the bird from the inside, which keeps it juicy. And then you get that crispy skin because it's not sitting down in any fat or water. However, most people do the beer can on the barbecue. This dish you can use in your oven sort of week in, week out. You can put other things on it. We have played. We've had pork on it, beef on it. You can bone out a leg of lamb, put lamb over it. I've even had a cauliflower sitting on that, pineapple.
Felicity from Balkan Pottery there.
Yeah, that all sounds rather good, Alan.
Yeah, it's a really good book. It's a fun book too, with some lovely puns in the chapter titles. The piece on Mark Poynton is called Poynton in the Right Direction, for example. It's a very reasonable £14.95 and is available in bookshops and many independent food outlets now. And it's part of a series that covers much of Britain. You know, there are books about eating in Liverpool, Bristol, Norfolk, Essex, South London, the Lake District, Devon, and loads more. Very useful if you're visiting any of those places.
Yes. You're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105 Radio. Coming up, a look at who is tweeting what on the Cambridge food scene today. We check out what is on offer on the free food app Olio, and we review the new edition of the book Where Chefs Eat. We take a look at a list of the world's top 50 restaurants, and we hear from Alice Archer from Cambridge Wine Merchants about wine, obviously. But before all that, we revealed that Alex Rushmer, ex-hole in the wall and putative Central Cambridge restaurateur, had the guilty food secret of hot dogs. Now here he explains why to Tina Roche and Liz Young of Cambridge Cookery and Bistro. But it doesn't stop there.
It's something Swedish, actually. I am a real sucker for hot dogs.
Oh, the Swedish hot dog.
The Swedish hot dog.
Now then I have to ask you, boiled or grilled?
Do you know what? I was always a boiled kind of guy until recently when I think that little Maillardy charriness on it is really, really good. Mm. Slightly warm, slightly soggy bread roll. So the sausage steams it from the inside.
Exactly.
Ketchup and mustard.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And then maybe if something spicy as well, either a bit of hot sauce or some pickled jalapeno chilies. I'd love a hot dog.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And they're on every street corner in Sweden. And of course, at that big Yellow and Blue warehouse. Yeah.
Yeah, for me, that's about the only reason to go sometimes. It's to fill up on hot dogs, yeah.
I must say, I am quite partial to finishing my son's fish fingers.
Really?
Love a fish finger. You know, a fish finger sandwich? It's quite good.
A fish finger sandwich with loads of mayo.
Yeah.
Some fresh rocket.
Yeah.
On really thick sliced white bread. Yeah.
And maybe even a little bit of chili sauce in the mayo mixed in.
Sweet chili?
Not sweet chili. Sriracha.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite nice. everyone has it.
Do you reckon sriracha is your favourite chili sauce?
I think it's high up there for sure. Yeah.
We like it on all our eggs, certainly.
Mm. Yeah. But mixed good with mayo with sriracha. And hot chips. Hot chips with mayo and that's good. I got that off Dutch friends though, so yeah.
So if you get chips in Belgium or France or Holland and you ask for it with mayo, it's like having mayonnaise but with a few chips.
Yes.
They go absolutely crazy for it.
Best way to have them.
But it's really good. Yeah.
And that was Alex Rushmer with Liz Young and Tina Roche. Actually, I thought they were veering towards the foodie there.
Well, well, wait till you hear the next one.
Tweet, 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 tweet,
And that music signals, of course, time for the latest food tweets from the city.
Yeah, Calverley's have just tweeted, Calverley's in Hooper Street. They are now serving beers and with Reggae Kitchen providing food from 1 o'clock until 9 o'clock. Sweet potato fries, jerk chicken, that sort of yummy thing.
Yeah.
At the Castle Hill Open Day, which is also on now, Garden Kitchen are there in the open, selling children's and adults' picnics. La Latina Buste Ronte is back. They're open until 9. That's opposite... God, is it Homebase or B&Q? It's that garden centre off Cowley Road, anyway.
Oh, Homebase, I think.
Near the Beehive Centre.
That's the one, yeah.
And Kingston Arms in Kingston Street have sent a rather unusual tweet. Because of the hot weather, they are not going to be doing Sunday roasts until autumn, by which time they think it will have cooled down a bit.
Now, this week, I met up with Jake and Mickey, two friends working together on Jake's new business, one that is earning a really great reputation for quality and taste. Now, neither of them have ever done an interview before, and I don't think I've ever met two guys more nervous when they were appearing on Flavour. But you know what? I bet you'd never know it to listen to them here.
Okay, so I'm Jake Ball, owner, founder of Seed to Feed Micro Farm, general dog's body.
I'm Mickey, I'm his helper, I think is the best way to describe me. Part-time farmer.
The timeless wonder of the English countryside.
So, what do I grow? So I love sweet and nutty things, like I love brassica leaves. Got these really beautiful red Russian kale, which is like a serrated leaf, really small, sweet and nutty. Beautiful colour red stem, kohlrabi leaf, it's a purple kohlrabi plant, but that's the leaf just harvested off. Beautiful purple top Milan turnips.
I grow radish. We grow a countless amount of cress.
I love growing pea shoots. Pea shoots are amazing.
The beauty of your plan, Leo, seems to rest on everybody being really into seeds.
My favourite thing, what was the thing with the chard? The golden chard?
The little baby yellow chard.
Yeah.
Wow. We get a lot of crops that come and go really quickly without even going on my weekly product list because there's not enough in the tray germinated. So, things like the baby yellow chard.
We just get all the good stuff.
Someone will get an opportunity to get 6 punnets of this. The yellow chard was amazing.
I think that's quite nice about being such a specialist thing. We've got a small number of customers, but if you've got something that's that small, you can go to them and say, I've got this, and only you can have it.
Yeah.
And then it's just them in the whole city that have got it.
Yeah. Yeah,
special for them, special for us.
I've ploughed this bit, right? And now I'm going to sow it.
I saw on the packaging in a photo on Twitter that you're a micro farm.
Yeah, mine's definitely well under a tenth of an acre. Absolutely tiny. Clues in the name, micro farm.
I first found out about you when I was chatting with Alexandra Olivier and Sam Carter of Restaurant 22.
Wow, yeah.
A guy came to see me on Saturday. His name's Jake. He's got a company called Seed to Feed.
Your product adds this extra flavour and complexity to dishes, and that's something that you tend to find in the more high-end restaurants, I suppose?
Yeah.
And it's all the little micro-cresses, radishes, baby turnips, mustard frills.
Well, that sounds interesting. Yeah. Yeah. We would be interested in meeting Jake.
I'll send him your details.
Chef Sam has been really incredible. He's a really good guy. I went to him first because I saw what he was doing at Restaurant 22.
Yeah. He literally picks the cress that morning, brings it to the restaurant.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful stuff.
You put it on Saturday night, didn't you? The mustard frill, was it? And we had so many comments on it.
Really?
Yeah, just a tiny, tiny leaf, but so much flavour in it. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, where's my supper, Neil?
Coming.
I'm a chef. I've been a chef for the last 6 years. I've been lucky enough to work in some really good places. I worked in Claridge's under Chef Martin Nail there. So I think a lot of the produce that I'm used to using, you know, the standard that I aspire to grow. So Sam's definitely the first guy to go to. He's been incredible, really good customer.
That's quite a jump as well, I think. Would it be fair to say a leap of faith going from a chef and then striking out on your own?
Completely, yeah. One at which I regret almost every single night. When I set the alarm for 3 or 4 o'clock and it's 1 o'clock in the morning already, you know, the business plan is a farm-to-table business. The next stage is definitely pop-up restaurants using the produce. full circle, really, getting back in the kitchen, getting back in the whites.
I suspect that you'd regret it more if you didn't take this step.
Yeah, exactly. Like you say, a massive leap of faith. One I'm really grateful I've had the opportunity for. Chefs like Sam and, you know, Ricardo at Gombe on Keys.
Yeah.
Their support and their faith in me is what gives me the opportunity to, like you say, leave a stable job and pursue what I'm really passionate about, which is farm-to-table cuisine and food.
Hello and welcome to another edition of University Challenge. This week, the teams represent Footlights College, Oxbridge. Yes, that's the spirit.
And that's where you've come from today, I think, isn't it? You've just come from Gonville and Keys?
Yeah, I've just come from Gonville and Keys, yeah. Well, I met Jack. We're working at Elementum together. I was sous chef there, and he ran away. He didn't want to work with me anymore to go and do this. We lost touch for, what, 2 months?
Yeah,
and then we met up again, and then I just went to see what he was doing, and I fell in love with it straight away. Then I went to Gonville and Keys, spoke to them about it. They were looking for a specialist produce supplier. Like, as soon as you see the produce, as soon as you meet him, he looks a bit weird, but but like you meet him, you see his passion for it, and it just, you fall in love with it yourself.
Yeah.
And it's,
What's a typical day like on the micro farm?
So Sunday's our main day.
Yeah.
Sunday's our work days.
What time do you get up? You get up at
4 or 5, yeah.
Thumbs to pick.
Morning
up.
Or evening?
In morning. Yeah. I go and pick Mickey up. Yeah.
Then we have breakfast, plan the day.
No, we missed the vital part.
We go to the gym.
First we go to the gym and we work out we work out all of the troubles.
We not put this bit in it.
And then we just plough through as many jobs as possible. We plant as many seeds as possible.
To be honest, it's fairly relaxed, isn't it? It's hard work. Like, if someone was to come for the day, it wouldn't feel like a day's work for them, I don't think. I think
it's like a proper lad's day,
it's like just a nice sit down and eat. I do a bit of planting, I do a bit of picking.
It's great.
Yeah. It's a long day.
We sow the seed, right? Nature grows the seed, and then we eat the seed.
It feels like days off for me.
Yeah.
So I'm used to just standing in the kitchen working, and I go to the farm.
You're outside working.
We're standing outside, pulling things out the ground, and then just we make them for lunch.
Yeah.
So effectively, Seed to Feed, the plantation, is operating out the back of your house, did you say?
Yeah, so I mean, it started way back, but I think the real key for farm to table food for me was, I mean, I started being a chef in college about 6 years ago.
Yeah.
But also, my grandfather passed away who had an allotment. I was like one of the only people that really would look after that allotment when he passed away. Essentially just cultivated a large amount of weeds for about 5 years. But I absolutely loved going down there. Only 3 or 4 weeks ago, we were eating asparagus from my granddad's allotment that he planted. Yes, I mean, that sort of lit flame, as it were. Yeah, when I did decide to really go for it, that's out the back of my house, as compact as you like. I've still got the allotment. People that my granddad knew at the allotment will pass by and say, like, he'd be really proud of how it looks now, which is like, that's the icing on the cake.
How about you, Mickey? Where did your life in food sprout from?
Well, I was lost. I was doing a law degree. I dropped out of university, didn't know what to do. My girlfriend at the time, she was like, you love to cook. Well, you just be a chef. Take a chance, be a chef. And everyone said, worst choice of your life. Don't do that. You get paid nothing. Low work, long hours. So I started that and actually found out I was quite good at it.
Very good at it.
Yeah. Very Don't put that in. Quite good at it. And yeah, I had no real interest, to be honest, in like the growing of food and the like the nurturing of food until I met you. Even when we was at Elementum together, you were very much into growing things, the process of getting food from the farm to the plate.
Yeah.
I didn't really care. I just thought, I get good produce in, doesn't matter where it comes from, who's making it. And then you've sort of encouraged me to find out where it's from, to know the person that's making it, to know how they're doing it, know how things are done.
Mm. It's a big part. I remember at Elementum on Saturdays when, days you couldn't get a delivery, I'd bring some luggage in or something like that.
Like, you think one turnip
Yeah.
One perfect little turnip that you, like in a Michelin-starred restaurant, you take for granted, really. How nice they have to be. And we've planted things and they've just been not good enough. Not being able to sell them. We have to use them, we have to eat them ourselves, but...
Luckily, we've got a very, very good compost and, and vermicompost system, which recycles a lot of food like that. Where I think the relationship with Mickey is really going to kick off is when we're back in the kitchen together and doing pop-ups, because, I mean, Mickey is, I kid you not, like, an incredible chef. Like, really, really good. And it's going to be really exciting when we're using the produce from the farm, yeah. And we've got Mickey there to make sure everything's bang on.
So kind, buddy.
So what years were you both at Alimentum?
Last year, was it? Beginning of 2017, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess you know the comings and goings of Mark and what he's up to and Samira.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Mark has just started his pop-ups.
Yeah.
Which are really kicking off. He's got one seed-to-feed salad on there every week, which is really good. Love going to see Mark, and I can't wait to go and eat when...
it'll be good for Cambridge, won't it? To have everything going.
Yeah.
When he gets a restaurant, it'll be...
Yeah, it's going to be really good.
Yeah. Are there any lesser considered herbs amongst the public that you guys would like to champion?
Mabuna.
Mabuna is an incredible crop. It's an Asian leaf. It's beautiful, really deep green in colour.
And the taste?
Oh,
peppery, sweet.
Yeah,
amazing.
Really good, yeah. Just incredible. One thing, so a forage as well, sheep sorrel is, it takes about an hour to get a punnet, but the leaf is beautiful. Its flavour is really sharp, really citrusy, and they're really small, delicate leaves, and they're in the depth of the forest. Oh, it's perfect. I didn't think pea shoots would be very popular.
Turns out everyone wants pea shoots, doesn't it?
Everyone wants pea shoots. It's just been nuts.
So you guys are very happy with the way things are going so far? Like you said, you've only been in operation for a relatively short time.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking for somewhere we can expand to, where we can have farm-to-table events, and it, you know, it can be actually farm-to-table directly. We'll find a plot. If any listeners have anywhere, feel free to email me at jake@seedtofeedmicrofarm.co.uk.
Well, Jake, Mikey, it's been great
Thank
to meet you.
So much.
Yeah, pleasure.
Thanks for coming into this hothouse, this polytunnel. I guess.
If you could play Can't Hardly Wait by The Replacements, or Alex Chilton by The Replacements, or anything by The Replacements, I would like. Yeah, Do My Beans would still be amazing.
Okay.
They are the best band in the world.
All right, great chatting to you. Thanks
you
very much.
You too, thank you very much.
Wow. And you're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105 Radio. The reason I said thanks for coming into this hothouse was because it was one of the hottest days of the year and we were squeezed into our little Studio B. That was Jake and Mikey of Seed to Feed, and you can contact them on Twitter at SeedToFeedMF. The MF stands for Microfarm. Incidentally, every little snippet of music we played was one of their favourites, and that rendition of A New England, that was actually Jake from a few years ago. He has been in a few bands, he's even supported Alabama 3. They're famous for the Sopranos intro theme, so well, they're not short of talent here in Cambridge, food or otherwise.
No, we're not. Yeah. Time to find out the guilty food pleasure of Sam Carter of Restaurant 22, and here he is with partner Alex Olivier.
I'm going to be honest, like pot noodles. I love pot noodles.
What flavour?
Chicken and mushroom.
Sometimes you have the brown one as well, or the spicy one too.
Well, brown is beef.
Brown is beef, yeah.
And I mean, when you're in the kitchen, you finish at 11, 12 at night, you haven't always got time to go home and make a really delicious meal, so
yeah,
I'm not proud of it. Yeah, that is a guilty pleasure.
Yeah.
But in terms of food, like, I just like simple, good, tasty food.
Yeah.
And I think that comes from pubs and stuff. I mean... Sausage and mash. If it's done well, I don't think you can beat it. A slow braised lamb shank or something like that. It's just proper, hearty cooking.
Fish and chips. Yeah, you can't go wrong.
Yeah.
Lots of salt, lots of vinegar.
I'm free.
Yes, here is news of free food available now in Cambridge, which you can find on the Olio app. And the Co-op has, well, there's Co-op low-fat tomato and bean soup on offer from a person called Nay. They're based near Addenbrookes. And Lorena, get this, she has so much from Pret-a-Manger. 4 ham and cheese and 2 brie and avocado toasties. Pickup time is tonight only. She's based just off Chesterton Road, but she has also got plenty of Pret-a-Manger baguettes, wraps, sandwiches, breads, and salads. That's amazing, wow, isn't
that's
it?
That's great.
Mm.
What a good idea.
Now, there is a new edition of the book Where Chefs Eat, and it is huge. Your hand's just holding it up in the studio now.
With both hands. And I'm struggling. Yeah, well, the first reaction was, it's huge. And the second was fascination. More than 650 chefs from around the world have been asked to list the places they like to eat at. Great idea.
So if you're travelling a lot, it's pretty useful, right?
Yeah, though pretty hefty to put in your luggage. You may want to compile your list of places to try out before leaving home. It's more than 1,100 pages long, and more than 4,500 places are recommended in more than 570 cities.
Okay, any in Cambridge?
Yeah, Midsummer House is in. Oddly, though, it's described as affordable. Each restaurant is assessed on price, i.e. expensive, affordable or budget. And there's a really nice system of categories. There's price, then there's style, like casual, smart casual, cuisine, such as modern British, Italian and even Portuguese patisserie, and recommended for. So it might be recommended for breakfast, for late night food, as a local favourite, bargain, high end or whatnot. And rather a nice touch, whether the chef concerned wished I'd opened it or not.
Who are the chefs doing the recommending?
Well, they range from top names to up and coming. Representing Britain, there are people like Yotam Ottolenghi, Nathan Outlaw is in there too, but also people like Will Bowlby. He's a name to watch, actually. He runs Cricket in Soho. That's Cricket with a K. An interesting place, actually. It started in a shipping container in Brixton, then moved to Soho, and has now opened up a new branch in a railway arch back in Brixton, where they have a more experimental menu than in Soho, which some people prefer, and definitely, as I said, one to watch.
And a book that size, is it easy to navigate?
Yeah, they've put a lot of work into it. Mm. It's organised by country, and within that by city or region, and there are maps showing where the recommended places are. There are also indexes by restaurant, by country, by type, like high-end or bargain, and each restaurant entry tells you who recommended it. And at the beginning of the book, there's a list of all the chefs who did the recommending and which ones they chose.
Yeah, so very comprehensive.
Yeah, endlessly fascinating too. And some, but by no means all, have a brief description of the restaurant.
And this book is readily available?
Yeah, I've seen it in several bookshops. Where Chefs Eat is £19.95, and it's published by Fiden.
Okay, so how many of them do you think you've eaten in?
Well, that's another aspect of it. Leafing through and seeing places you ate in ages ago, remembering them. I was looking to see if the Swan Oyster Depot in San Francisco was in, because that's a very good place, but really rather off the tourist trail.
Yeah, was it?
Yes, it was, yeah. And while I was looking at that part of the book, I checked to see if Chez Panisse was there, and that is too. And that's of interest in Cambridge because it's one of the places that Jacques Van Prague of Jack's Gelato worked at before he got into ice cream.
Indeed. Mm. Okay, let's move on to our next feature, and we return to the more secretive side of chef's choices.
You know, for me it would be, it's not too guilty, but I would have a piece of toast, but it would have to be good sourdough toast, but then I'd like peanut butter on it. And ideally salted butter and peanut butter. Wonderful.
A lady of excess.
What about you?
Brilliant. For myself, really guilty pleasures, as long as you don't tell anybody, salt and vinegar crisps, not fussy where they come from. I'd eat them off the floor.
Yes, 100%. Really?
I adore salt and vinegar crisps, and the scummier the better.
It is. When we were in Launceston Place, we used to have a record label just up the road, and they hosted an M&M thing, say Eminem was in town, they hired the whole of HMS Belfast for one of his record releases, sort of thing. But Eminem, the rapper, right? So he's got this big album release on the whole of HMS Belfast. I found this out because they used to entertain their sort of artists at the restaurant after they do these releases and all this sort of stuff. We once had Meatloaf trying to pay us cash for the artwork at the restaurant. but this, yeah, it's fillet of fish. So all the journalists are there, the dancers, the whole thing. This is, I mean, it's a big launch on HMS Belfast. Eminem is not coming out until he's had a fillet of fish. They put all the buffet on, anything you want. This boy's not getting out of his cabin until he's had his fillet of fish. So they had to send someone out to McDonald's to get it and come back.
Simple pleasures.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know if he had anything to eat in the restaurant. Maybe the rest of his crew were.
Oh, well, yeah, we're all creatures of habit, I suppose.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing, isn't it? I do find it interesting what famous people eat. I remember reading about Wayne Rooney being on holiday and tucking into chicken nuggets. and just as people used to say that youth is wasted on the young, I do wonder if money is wasted on the super rich. But anyway, I thought I heard your voice in there, Matt, and the one with Sam and Alex from Restaurant 22 sounding very knowledgeable about pot noodles and salt and vinegar crisps.
I can definitely attest to the latter. I have such a soft spot for salt and vinegar. And like I said, the worse, the better they are. There's just something so utterly addictive. Anyway, you're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105 Radio. And in a few minutes, Alice Archer from Cambridge Wine Merchants will be along to talk about summer red wines. But before then, you can come across some restaurant advice that the super rich or ordinary people on a special occasion might be interested in.
Yeah, when the super rich want a break from chicken nuggets or even fillet o' fish, or when ordinary people want to dream, they might be interested in the website at farandwide.com. It's produced in San Francisco, and it has some interesting travel and food articles. And one that caught my attention is a link to the world's top 50 restaurants.
Are these lists, aren't they a little bit dubious?
Yeah, they probably are. They ought to provide more information about how they were selected so you can make your own judgment about their worth. But anyway, it's interesting.
OK, so what did you pick out?
Well, the country with the most restaurants in the top 50. Any thoughts as to what that might have been?
I'd go for France, probably.
Yeah, well, actually, France was second. Spain.
OK.
Spain was first. Yeah. And in the top five or six, there was Spain, France, USA, Italy and Peru. Actually, I think Peru might have been sixth.
Okay. And how much are the meals at them?
Well, a meal for two at 11 Madison Park in New York will cost about $1,000, including wine. And to be honest, that's not as much as I'd expected. The wine is the sting. Mm. The meal is $315 and the suggested wine pairings, it's an eight-course menu. It's $175. Alternatively, you can take your own wine, for which they charge a corkage of $75 a bottle.
That is a bargain, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
In that place, anyway.
In the list, there were three from the UK.
Mm.
They were all in London. And the top five restaurants in the world were first in Italy, then Spain, France, USA in New York, and Thailand.
Okay.
So it's an interesting... It's interesting website.
Mm. Now, once more, onto the Cambridge Wine Merchants, dear friends. Alice Archer has some advice on summer reds.
There might be some wines that you're enjoying at the moment. You might still like having a big, hearty Cabernet Sauvignon, but I'm guessing if it's at room temperature, it's going to be pretty warm, and that warmth is going to make the alcohol stand out. So, again, even a big red in this kind of temperature, just putting it into the fridge for half an hour even. But the reds that I've chosen to look at today, most of them can be chilled down to 10 degrees happily and be really tasty. The wines I've chosen that I think work best with being chilled tend to have slightly higher acidity, slightly lower alcohol, most importantly lower tannin. That tannin is the grip that you have in your mouth around your teeth and your cheeks and your gums that you get from the skins of red grapes. So high acidity, low alcohol, low tannin, basically refreshing and juicy and quite crunchy is what we're looking at. So you can chill these all year round, it's not just for summer, but they're particularly nice, refreshing summer drinking, I find, particularly with some lighter foods, some salads or cured meats or whatever.
So we have before us five bottles. Cheapest starts at $8.50 up to $15.99.
Yep, and we're looking at a Barbera here. Got a 2015 Barbera. for £8.50. It's from Oltrepo Pavese in northwest Italy near Piemonte. A little bit brambly. This particular one's got a bit of a kind of tomato vine character. It's slightly green around the edges. It's down at 13%. Lots of nice, fresh, crunchy berry fruit. Barbera has a naturally high acidity, also reasonably thin skin, so you're not getting too many tannins in here. Other Italian wines that we're looking at as well, we've got a Valpolicella here, and this is not Valpolicella Rapasso or Valpolicella Classico. This is just straight, bog-standard Valpolicella. A friend of mine once described basic Valpolicella as the Italian equivalent to Beaujolais. It's easygoing. It's made from a grape variety called Corvina. Reasonably light skin, not too heavy, high acidity grape varieties. In the Valpolicella region, you've also got a place called Amarone, and you've got Valpolicella Rapasso, which is a style where they're drying out the grapes and you're getting these really big, rich, juicy, dense, really high alcohol wines. But straight, normal Valpolicella is great for me because it's, again, down at 13%, whereas Amarone and Valpolicella Rapasso, you're looking at 15%.
Okay.
So they've concentrated it all up. But this is going to be very elegant for me, standard Valpolicella, and much underrated. You don't see enough of it, in my opinion. I've also put three red wines on the table here. I've got a charming Fleury that I've put out on the table. We've got quite a lot of Beaujolais at the moment. We've got some lovely Beaujolais Village, and we've also got a few wines from the 10 crew of Beaujolais. And Fleury is one of those 10 crew. So these are the kind of top-class vineyards of the Beaujolais region. Beaujolais is the very southern end of the Burgundy region. Just another thing about this lineup we've got here is that we're looking at grape varieties we don't see as often.
Yes.
Growing grape variety called Gamay. Gamay pretty much only grows in Beaujolais. It's not allowed to be grown further north in Burgundy. I've got out here a Fleury. We've also got some wine from Morgon, or from Moulin-Avant, some wine from Bruy. These are all different to the 10 crew of Beaujolais. Fleury, though, for me, is the most charming, the most elegant. It's got some lovely floral character. Mm. The way that they make wine in Beaujolais, there's some quite nitty-gritty about it. It's a process called semi-carbonic maceration. This can result in various different flavours. Quite often it ends up with a bit of a sour cherry flavour, sometimes a banana-y character. It tends to be quite a bright, vivid purple colour. But most importantly, carbonic maceration results in quite low tannin, but high acidity. So you're looking at, again, light tannins that are not going to overpower you, but you're going to have lovely, refreshing, slightly sour cherry kind of characters. All these wines that we're looking at, they're youthful, they're young. We're not going to be looking at anything that's more dried and smoky. We're not really looking at oak aging or anything like that, but we're looking at some really charming, pure, soft, fresh fruit. If you fancy something a bit heavier but still like the sound of that, then you can look at Morgon or Moulin-Avant, which tend to have slightly more robust flavours, maybe a bit more black fruit coming through, slightly heavier in style. What else have we got on the table? Red Sancerre. Sancerre region in the far east of the Loire Valley is always known for its white wines, really classic Sauvignon Blanc white wine. But they also grow Pinot Noir there. And red Sancerre is a thing, as is pink Sancerre. And they're both made from Pinot Noir. We've got one here from a producer called Jean-Luc Rambeau. It is $15.99, but it's 100% Pinot Noir. And again, it's really juicy. You're not necessarily looking at the layers or maybe some of the gaminess and the meatiness of a Burgundian Pinot Noir, but you're looking at really fresh, vibrant fruit. Slightly crunchy as well, very crisp fruit from the cooler climate that it's growing in. Loire reds across the board for me are quite charming to be chilled and drunk in the summer. You can get some really delicious Cabernet Franc based wines from around Saumur and Bourgogne and places like that further to the centre of the Loire Valley. And lastly, we've got a wine called Misunderstood. I love this wine. It's from a grape variety called Sanso, spelled C-I-N-S-A-U-L-T. And we've actually got one other wine made 100% from Sanso, also from the same region as this, from the Languedoc area of southern France. And the other wine we've got made 100% from Sanso is called L'Étranger. So we've got one that's called Misunderstood, and the other one's called L'Étranger, which translates as the stranger. It's basically saying this grape variety isn't very common. It's always been considered a workhorse grape variety, just to bulk out cheap Van de Pay wine. So it's always been a blending material, not just allowed to sing by itself. But these two, the Misunderstood from a producer called Domaine Comblanche, and the L'Étranger is from a producer called Domaine des Trinités. And I think they've done really wonderful things with the grape variety. It's a bit more blackcurranty, a bit more brambly, some more dark fruits. But then there's this little brambly, sort of wild raspberry thing, black raspberry, little bit floral, very smooth, very elegant. But once you chill it down, that lovely crisp acidity again, and the tannins just nicely resolved. And I like the way both these winemakers, both Domaine Cône Blanche and Domaine des Trinités, they've gone for a bit of a jokey name and said, look, we're sorry, you know, you don't normally drink Sanso or necessarily want to, but here we are. So say I worked with it in South Africa. They're remarkable grapes. They look like table grapes. Yeah. Most wine grapes are very small, very tight, clustered bunches. But these ones, big bunches, huge grapes, very thin skins, quite pale almost. Yeah. Delicious to eat by themselves, but lots of flesh, very little skin. Which means you're ending up with a reasonably light colour, the white flesh to the red skin ratio. The stuff we made actually came out at about 12.5%. It was really light and fragrant. Sometimes you get a bit more of a gamey note in Sanso that can be a bit more serious, foodie wine. So all of these are delicious by themselves. I think that's the important thing. The moment you do have something that's layered, smoky, maybe vanilla-y, maybe it's had lots of oak in it, suddenly you need the food as a foil. Whereas all of these, it's about the purity of the fruit and the freshness of the acidity, and so they're lovely drinking by themselves, but also a great complement to food as well.
Well, thank you very much, Alice. That's been a nice busman's holiday of five reds for a wonderful barbecue evening, or just...
by themselves, just with friends watching the sunset at 10 p.m. or whatever it is, yes.
There's one a week there for the next 5 weeks, I think.
Yes, or one a day for the heatwave for the next week.
Okay, thank you very much, Alice.
Super, not at all. Thank you, Matt.
Yeah, many thanks to Alice Archer of the Cambridge Wine Merchants for that advice, and all five reds are available in their branches now. And green onions, of course, signals the start of our news section, and we begin with jobs.
Yeah, Olio, who we heard about before, is looking for volunteers to join their team. The details are on their website, olioex, that's olioex.com. The Waterman Pub in Cambridge is looking for a chef de partie and a sous chef. Pop in for details. Wagamama in Cambridge needs a line chef. Send your CV to cambridge@wagamama.com. And finally, the old bicycle shop in Regent Street wants full and part-time people in a variety of roles. Again, pop in with your CV.
Dr. Sue Bailey is appearing today, that's Saturday, if you're listening to our live show, and in the guise of Fanny Craddock. She is engaging the history of jelly at the Museum of Cambridge. That's at 2 p.m. and then again at 3:30, and it's part of the Castle Hill Open Day. Now, there are lots of events going on. Details are online, and street food is available from Wandering Yak, Azahar Street Food, and Pizza Mondo, as well as food from the Garden Cafe in Kessel's Yard.
In the news this week is the fact that another restaurant chain is closing. This is the one that runs the upmarket steak chain Gaucho and also Cow, which has a restaurant in Bennett Street.
Some nice classes for children during the summer holidays at Cambridge Cookery and Bistro off Hills Road. On the 7th of August, fresh pasta making. That's from 10 till 2:30. That costs...
actually, it's 10 till 12:30.
That's £50 a ticket. And also on the 7th of August, but in the afternoon, Italian for teens, making pasta and risotto. That's from 1:30 to 4 p.m. and costs £55. On the 9th of August, summer desserts for children, including making lemon and raspberry posset, strawberry shortbread, and classic chocolate ice cream sandwich. That's from 10 till 12:30, cost £40. And the next day, 10th of August, there's parents and children French baking from 10 till 1. That's cost ranging from 35 to 75. That is a selection of the classes, and more can be found on their website.
Rico Tapas and Cambridge Wine Merchants are organising a tapas and wine tasting series again this year. It's the third year they've done it, and they want to turn these events into a foodie experience. Details are on the Cambridge Wine Merchants website. And that's all we have time for today.
Yes, it is.
If you missed some or just want to hear the whole thing over again, remember we're on alternative Sundays at 2 p.m. The live show is Saturdays at noon, and we're podcast early the following week.
And if you'd like to get in touch with any news or comment when we're off the air, you can email us flavour@cambridge105.co.uk or contact us on Twitter at flavour105.
At 1 o'clock is Cambridge Alumni, the first of a new series today featuring Griff Rhys-Jones as Tony Barnfield's special guest. 2 till 3, 21st century women, including Dame Mary Archer. 3 till 5, Summer Saturday. 5 till 6, 105 This Week, the best of Cambridge 105. 6 till 7, The Saturday Soul Show. 7 till 8, O'Reilly Country. And 8 till 10, Paul Cristoforo with Rock of Ages. And 10 till midnight, Club Beats. But that is all from us. We will be back on the 4th of August. And until then, from Matt and me,
goodbye.
And happy eating.
Yes.